Golf Smarter number 614. I'd like to welcome a new sponsor, Flavier, the world's largest online club that allows members to enjoy and learn about fine spirits. And we're giving away two more Swing Coach clubs in a video review session with Dean Reinmuth. Deadline to enter is looming. Make sure you register to win before December 12th, 2017. And stay tuned because we now have a chance for you to get a free copy of Tony Manzoni's DVD, The Lost Fundamental. All you have to do is ask a question or submit a concern about your game to our toll-free number at 415-761-1498. Keep it simple, stupid. Improve your game with the tools you have with Davey Evans.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Davey.
Hello, Fred.
How are you?
I'm doing just wonderful, and I hope you are.
Thank you. I'm feeling excited because I'm coming to visit your neck of the woods pretty soon. You're down in the Palm Springs area, correct?
That is correct, yes.
And how long have you been down there?
I came in 1963.
Oh, you've seen a lot of changes.
It certainly has. It's a wonderful place to live, though.
And did you go to Palm Springs to become a teaching professional?
No, I went to Palm Springs. I was a very young man, and I went to work at a private country club as an assistant pro. And then I became the head golf professional at that club. That was La Quinta Country Club.
Oh, La Quinta is a pretty well-known golf course in that area.
Yes, it is. They used to have, but they still do. They have played the Career Builders there and the Bob Hope Classic. One of the courses for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how long were you the head pro at La Quinta?
I was 27 years.
Oh, my. That's impressive.
Well, and it was wonderful. And when I left Fridley, I was fortunate enough that they gave me a lifetime honorary membership, so I enjoy that, too.
Oh, wow. Do you like playing that golf course?
It's a wonderful golf course. It's just great. The fellow that won the Career Builders last year shot 59 on it, which is unbelievable to me, but... Yes, they're so good.
Wow. What was the best score you ever had at La Quinta?
I had 64.
And you just can't imagine somebody shooting a 59, huh?
I cannot. You know, it just I was about as well as I could play. So, but, you know, it was just these young fellows are very strong and very good.
59. That is remarkable. This was a professional. This wasn't somebody who was intimately familiar with the course, like a member of La Quinta, was it?
No, it was not. No, it was not. It was the fellow that he was playing in the, and it was happened during the tournament that they call the Career Builders now, the PGA Tour tournament, and he shot 59 in the tournament.
Oh, man. How many times, do you know how many times he had played the course before he shot the 59?
I do not. I know he had not played a tremendous amount. He was relatively new on the PGA Tour.
As a teacher there, and the following week and months and years beyond that, and people come to you and say, listen, I want to take some lessons here. You know, I'm a member of La Quinta Country Club. You've been here for years. Can you get me to score in the 60? I mean, how do you explain that to people that he was able to be so successful?
Well, you know, you could probably take that fellow, if it's coming to me, if you could take 40 years away from his age and put him in the gym and on the driving range like these fellows do every day, you might be able to get there, but that's what it would take.
And it would take playing golf 10 hours every single day of your life.
That's right. And the gym and everything. That's what life is now.
Yeah, yeah. So before you arrived in Palm Springs in 1963 You said you were a young man. How young were you when you became the assistant pro in 1963 at La Quinta?
29.
You were 29. So what was happening before that?
I played the tour a little bit, and I run a, and at that time, the people, the golf professionals that played the tour were normally club pros. Uh-huh. So we would leave our job in the summer, in the wintertime, and we would go play the tour. And that's what I did. I was the I was a golf pro in a little golf club called Richland Golf and Country Club in Richland, Washington, the state of Washington. Mm-hmm. So in the summertime I worked, and the wintertime I played.
So in the wintertime you played on the tour?
That's correct, yes.
Any success?
Well, it's, as I said, the internet, there's a spot on there that says unspectacular, and it definitely was unspectacular, but it was a wonderful life and a great time.
How many rounds did you get to play on the tour? You remember?
Well, I was, at that time, it was a different world. It was what we called, they called them rabbits, and you qualified on Monday to get into the tournament. And if you were lucky enough to qualify and could qualify and get in, and you were lucky enough to make the cut, you were automatically in the next tournament. And, of course, if you could accidentally win one, then you add it to your exemption. But the rabbit was mostly what we did. We went to a place and qualified on Monday, and we hoped we qualified. If we didn't, we jumped in the car and drove to the next stop.
Yeah, I can't imagine that you were jumping on airplanes going from stop to stop in the 50s.
No, we were not. And frankly, they, even economically, we couldn't, most of us couldn't do it.
Did you share cars and rides with people, or everybody was on their own?
Mostly caddies.
Mostly the caddy would drive with you?
That's correct.
I see. I see. Give me your best round on the tour, or your best weekend on the tour. Bring us back.
Well, it was a complete week, and that was in Utah, the Utah Open. And I finished 19th and made $375. And I said, this is about as good as I can play. I better go get a job.
And that was the pinnacle of your professional touring career?
That's correct. That was in that tournament. Now, in the Bob Hope Classic at my golf course, the first three rounds, I played very, very well and was in approximately seventh or eighth spot going to the fourth round. I finished 19th in that also.
Uh-huh.
But I was working then. I was a professional there. I knew the golf course and played many rounds on it.
Mm-hmm. Who, during your time on, I find the history of this so fascinating. During your time on the tour, who are some of the great players that you got to see while you were inside the ropes playing as well, that you got to maybe even be part of the foursome with?
Sure. There was Hogan, Snead, and DeVincio, and there was just the older fellows. A guy by the name of Buck White was a great player, and there was, but mostly was the Hogans and the Snead's and the Demerits and Nelsons, and you know, they were the gentlemen that were out there, and they were the stars.
Yeah. Did you ever get to be in the foursome with one of them?
I had been fortunate enough to have dinner with Ben Hogan. And I have a photo of him and I having dinner, and I'm keeping that for my son. But I enjoyed him very much. He was I had a different perspective of him than what some people have. They thought he was a very cold person, but I thought he was a very active person and a very nice man to be around.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, he would, you would ask him a question and he would stare at you for a few seconds, and you would think that he was angry at you for asking the question, but what he was doing was trying to figure out how to answer the question.
Oh, wow.
So he just was a different person, but a wonderful person, too.
Oh, that's great.
probably, I thought he was probably the greatest golfer that ever lived. And the reason that I say this is, you know, he was in a terrible head-on car crash with his wife with a Greyhound bus, and they said that he would never walk again. And he won 3 majors after that.
Isn't that remarkable?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Did you get to have dinner with him before or after his accident?
After the accident.
After the accident.
Yeah, I was the head professional at McKenna Country Club, and I was invited to Fort Worth to have dinner with him.
Amazing. That's a great story. Congratulations to have that and that picture. Well, I hope your son honors that picture.
Oh, he will. Yes, he's a golfer, and he will honor it.
Oh, that's great. That's great to put that picture for a golfer to put that up and say, yeah, it's my dad with Ben Hogan. That is pretty, pretty, pretty good. Tell me about, do you consider that you have a teaching style?
Well, it's an old style teaching. I keep it as, you know, that old saying about a teacher, keep it simple, stupid. So that's kind of the teaching that we do. And I believe that golf is a lot of a short game, 75 yards in. The person that learns to do that correctly can play golf with anyone and enjoy themselves. So it's what I do, and I teach a lot of that. I was fortunate enough to be the Teacher of the Year here in the desert in 2000. So I've had success with it, and I'm too old to change. So I keep it very simple.
So that's fascinating that you say that you're too old to change. So you have your old ways of playing golf, and I have to believe that golf is a very different game in 2017 than it was in 1963.
No question.
What do you see as the greatest change, the most positive change?
Well, I think that probably we get some great advertisement through people like you and the media. I think that this Golf Channel 24 hours a day is, definitely is a great advertisement for golf. I believe that the golf ball itself is probably the largest reason for scoring lower than it used to be. Is the golf ball itself is 20 to 25 yards longer than it was in 1963.
Is that a problem?
I think that it's wonderful because what we're doing, and I think that, you know, just reading about you, I think that what you're probably doing is that you're involved in the masses of golf. You're not so involved in tours. And I think that the masses of golf can hit the ball. The 60-year-old guy can hit it 20 yards farther than he could have with the same ball in 1963. He's relative the same distance now that he was then, so it makes golf more enjoyable for him.
I'm all for it. The easier you can make it, the more fun you're going to have.
That's exactly right, yes.
And what about the change in equipment? I mean, it's not just balls.
That's right. It is. There's been some great changes. But, you know, there is, I believe the ball is the big one. Now, they've definitely improved it, and they do a lot of advertisement on improving and the graphite shafts and the graphite heads and the changing of the loft of the club and being able to do anything with it that you wanted to do. You could make it a 7-degree or a 10.5-degree driver and just by taking the screw and changing it. But they've only made golf clubs. They have not made any swings yet.
Right. And I'm not sure what you mean by they haven't made any swings yet.
Well, you just say they can't. Whoever has the club has to swing the club. So
right.
Your ability to swing that club is not going to make you a 69 player just because you have the club.
Right. I see what you're saying. So then it's up to the teacher on making
that's corrected.
The, and so what do you see as the least positive aspect of golf in 2017 versus what you remember from 1963?
Well, I think that we had a lot more color in golf. We had more color on the PGA Tour, and we had more people that were colorful. Now they're kind of robots out there. But that's, you know, it's according to whether you want to call that good or bad. I have no opinion of it, but the golf in the last few years has, since the economy crash, has taken a beating, but we're on our way back. It is actually the PGA and the United States Golf Association. It has awakened them, and they're advertising and doing commercials and everything else to get more golfers, which they didn't have to do before because they were there already. So they have become aware that we do need to participate in expanding golf.
We're going to go ahead and take a short break, and we'll be back in a second. All right, Davey Evans, you're teaching now at Indian Springs Golf Course, right? You're no longer at La Quinta.
That is correct, yes.
And you've been at Indian Springs for a while. Tell me about that golf course. That's the one I want to play when I come down.
Sure. And this golf course is it's not overly long and it's not overly short. It's kind of what we call player friendly. It's always in wonderful condition. They have a great superintendent. They have a nightclub there called the Big Rock Pub, who's rated number one in the valley. They have done a great job in promoting it. So it's a wonderful place to just come and relax and play golf.
And who are you teaching these days at Indian Springs? What's the clientele like?
Well, I teach a lot of country club people that I've known them for over the years. And I also have the air conditioners, the plumbing people, the window people. So I'm have a variety. I spread out pretty good.
A lot of different people. But isn't the clientele, and Indian Springs is it in Palm Springs?
No, it's in La Quinta.
Oh, it's in La Quinta.
In fact, it's a unique golf course. There is half the golf course is in La Quinta, California, and half the golf course is in Indio, California.
In Indio, California?
Yes.
And
yes,
how,
half of it.
How close is that to Palm Springs?
Well, it's La Quinta's approximately 17 miles.
Oh, okay. Not that far. In the same area there. And yes. What do you mean it's half in La Quinta and half in
well, the boundary itself, the golf course is built. One side of the golf course is on the side of the street of La Quinta called Jefferson Street, and the other half is built on the other side of Jefferson, which is Indio, California.
Oh,
Jefferson is the dividing.
So when I'm playing Indian Springs, what do I need to keep be aware of that could create issues for me when I'm playing there?
You know, and I know you do it all the time, but you just bring your straight driver with you.
Oh, you don't want me to bring my crooked driver?
No.
Leave the one that with the big slice. Leave that one at home, huh?
Yes, that's correct.
I'll do what I can. I'd love to talk to you a little bit about the clinics that I talked to Tony about just recently. He says that you and Gary and Tony are going to be doing these clinics that are just like an hour and a half long, 39 people, 30 minutes with each teacher, and you rotate the three people to each teacher. And you're only charging $75 for the hour and a half. I'm finding that absolutely amazing for the amount of skill that the teachers have behind them.
thank God that I don't have to depend on my teaching income to survive my living. I do this teaching because I love to do it, and I love golf. And all three of us that are doing this together, Tony and Gary and I, Gary has 46 years on his PGA card, and I have 54, and Tony's over 50. So we have a lot of years of experience in teaching golf. But
a century and a half.
Well, it's a long time, isn't it? They don't even like me talking about this around them. They say to
we won't tell them. We won't tell them, Dave.
But it's there. It's what we have. So
a century and a half of golf instruction. That is, between three people, that is pretty remarkable.
Well, I mean, it's been a fun life. It certainly has.
What aspect do you like to focus on when you're teaching?
I like to focus more on the short game itself, but I do teach. I believe that the driver is important, and after you get off the tee, if you've got a great short game, then you can score in the game of golf. And golf is a game where everyone tries to hustle the ball out there, and the only important thing in golf is they give you a scorecard when you go out, and there's a little box on there for each hole to write a number in. And that box isn't large enough to put any photos in there of how you did it. It's just the number that's important. So the lower the number you can put in that box, the easier the game is.
And how would you define a good short game? What does that mean?
Well, that means from 75 yards in, if you can learn to get the ball in the hole in no more than three strokes, and you'll do it in two sometimes, but you should never do it in four. So if you can learn to get it in the hole in three strokes, then your game is going to be okay. You can play golf and have fun.
I hope you're right.
Well, it is. And, you know, Fred, we lose a lot of ladies that start out to play golf. And golf is very intimidating, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they will go out and they'll hit the ball up 75 yards from the green, and they hit it in the sand trap to the right, and then they hit it over the green into the sand trap on the left, and they hit it back into the sand trap, and they look up and there's two guys waiting in a golf cart for them to get out of the way so they can finish the hole.
Mm.
So the lady becomes very intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can teach them to get that from 75 yards on the green, take their putter out, one or two putt, put the putter back in their bag, go to the next tee, they can enjoy golf.
Do you feel that a lot of the problems from 75 yards and in has more to do with mechanics, mental game, or even just tension, that people, like, they can take a beautiful practice swing, but once they step up and start staring at the ball, everything gets tense from their hands, their shoulders, their neck, arms?
No question. You've picked that right. Now, the only thing that gets rid of the tension is success. So if a person can get more success, and if you can get two more good shots today than you did yesterday and two more good shots the next day, then you're eventually going to get away from the tension, because confidence takes away tension.
But this is golf. So even if we're getting two strokes better this round, two strokes the next round, it's quite possible that the round after that we can drop another eight strokes. I mean, go backwards and add another eight strokes to a round.
Exactly right. And then you can, you just have to forget it and start all over again and go two better and two better and keep going. And the most important shot you're going to ever hit in golf is the next shot.
I always thought that was the hardest shot in golf, was the next one.
It is, and it's the most important one.
It is. It is. So yeah. It's all about staying present and staying in the process.
That's correct.
I need to ask you about the Porcupine Creek.
Porcupine Creek was a wonderful, wonderful place. It was a gentleman by the name of Tim Blixeth and his wife, Edra. They had 250 acres, and they built their home and four guest houses on it. And they built a beautiful, beautiful golf course. It was rated 14th in the state by Golf Digest. This gentleman, who was not a real good golfer, but he was a very smart man, he was 99 9/10% the architect of this golf course. He would ask questions of me and Tom Weisskopf and people like that, but he made his own decision on it. So it was a beautiful, beautiful place. And some of the things, they also own the Yellowstone Club in Big Sky, Montana. And that is a city. That is a golf, couple of golf courses and a ski lift and just a city. And they just, I had already left when all of this happened, but I had retired. But they went through a divorce, and the lady got the Yellowstone Club in Porcupine Creek, and when the economy crash hit, both of them went south of the border, so she ended up losing all of them, and a gentleman by the name of Larry Ellison, who is with one of the internet companies, he's rated somewhere in the top 10 in the world and the richest. He owns it now, so he's never going to go broke. But it's still, I understand he's changed it some, but he also owns the tennis gardens in Indian Wells, where they have the big tennis tournament here every year.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, and he owns this Porcupine Creek mostly now. He doesn't play golf. He owns it for his tennis players to play golf.
I didn't think he played golf. I thought he was all yachting.
Yeah, he does not play golf. And I shouldn't say he doesn't play golf. You know, I know he does. He's not an avid golfer.
Right. And you were, initially, you were a director of golf for Porcupine
That's
Creek.
Correct.
And how many members at this golf club?
We didn't have any members. It was owned by this gentleman and his wife, and only them and their guests played. I got to do a lot of short game practice because there wasn't any golfers around for me to take care of. So,
But it was a full-time job.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was paid very well. There was an article in somewhere around 2002 in Golf Digest. It was the golf job, and it was about me there at Porcupine Creek.
What that sounds like the greatest job a golf teaching professional could have is that you're working for somebody who owns the golf course. It's not a public course. It's not a private course. It's just this guy's course. And
in his backyard.
In his backyard. And how often did he play, or how often did he bring his friends out to play?
Well, you know, it's according to whether they were in town. If they were at home, they played quite a bit. If they traveled a lot. So they would, while they were there, there would be people there every day for a week or two, and then they would leave town and come back in 3 weeks and do it all over again. So, and there would only be, now, in fairness to them, they used this course for a lot of charity work. Uh-huh. They would have charity tournaments there where they charged people quite a bit of money to come and play it, and all of the money went to charity. So there was a lot of good done with Porcupine Creek, and I understand that Larry Ellison does some of the same thing, that he lets charity tournaments come in there and raise money for their charity.
Unbelievable. That's so interesting. And, again, not only a dream for any golfer, but a dream for a golf pro to be able to just work on your game while you're being paid to wait for somebody to show up.
Well, it was I was in charge of everything. I was in charge of the golf course, of the condition of it, everything else, and in charge of the superintendent. So
Oh, good.
It gave me something to do, but I didn't get bored. That's for sure.
That's for sure. But you had a superintendent. It's not like you were in charge of driving the mower and the blower every morning either.
No. They would have.
I guess money's no object.
Yeah, that was that was the deal. Money was no object.
Unbelievable. All right, before we wrap this up, I would love for you to share with us your favorite short game piece of advice. I don't want to call it a tip, but your go-to piece of advice on 75 yards and in.
Okay. About 50 years ago, I sat and watched a gentleman give a golf lesson. His name was Johnny Rivolta. And Johnny had won the United States Open. And he was given a lesson, and I was privileged enough to get to sit and watch him. And he talked about hinge and hold, and that's to break your wrist on the backswing and get the club up. And on the follow-through, hold the club without it breaking immediately after you hit the ball. So I sat and watched him, and I taught this forever. And a few years ago, I purchased the Phil Mickelson short game video. And what Phil Mickelson talked about was the hinge and hold. So it hasn't changed in 50 years. It's been the same. You break your hands on the backswing and hold them on the follow through. There's no flipping to it. So the people that slap at it and flip it, they have a real problem in short game. The people that can learn to hold it, they get very, very good.
So interesting. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this conversation. And best of luck with the clinics with Tony. And I can't wait to meet you.
The same here, Fred. And look forward to seeing you. And thank you.
I'm very excited to welcome a new and intriguing sponsor to Golf Smarter. Have you heard about Flavier? If you have a refined taste for spirits, then you may already be familiar with them. Flavier is the world's largest online club of spirits enthusiasts with an amazing collection of more than 15,000 spirits to choose from. Founded in 2012 by three friends who used to get together regularly for fine spirit tastings. And that led to the idea of tasting boxes that would enable you to do the same. Their goal is to help people discover and experience spirits in a new and fun way. Now, Flavier members receive themed tasting box that lets you try different spirits before you buy a full-size bottle. I like that idea. Access to their vault, which holds a selection of rare and hard-to-find spirits available to members only. Exclusive Flavier private bottlings. And a Flavier app. It's like the IMDb of spirits. And every quarter, members receive a complimentary themed tasting box of spirits and can purchase additional tasting boxes at members-only prices. Now, Flavier usually has a waiting list, but we've arranged a backdoor to entry just for the Golf Smarter community. Go to Flavier.com. Flavier is F-L-A-V as in Victor, I-A-R. Flavier.com/exclusive. And use the coupon code GOLFSMARTER at checkout. That's flavier.com/exclusive with a coupon code GOLFSMARTER at checkout. So I've just returned from Palm Springs, and while there, I met with Davey, Tony Manzoni, and next week's guest, Gary Hopkins. These are three amazing coaches with more than 150 years of combined teaching experience, who will be offering these 90-minute clinics covering full swing and short game for only $75 at Indian Springs Golf Club in La Quinta. Again, these clinics are offered multiple times per week, and there's a limit of 9 students per clinic. Now, if you're in the Southern California area, or you have an upcoming trip scheduled to this desert golf mecca, you really should try to work with these guys. If you want more information, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com and I'll put you in touch. But there's even more news on this front. Now, hopefully, you've heard me talking about this new toll-free number that I've opened for you to submit a question or a concern about your game. Here's the exciting news. Once you've submitted your question, I'm going to be able to forward that to Tony Manzoni. And if he answers your question on an upcoming episode, you'll receive a free copy of Tony's DVD, The Lost Fundamental. These DVDs are not available anywhere, and many of you already know that because you've emailed me asking where to get them. So this is your best chance to get a DVD and get it for free. Call in our toll-free number, 415-761-1498, and just leave your question. And I'll leave that number in today's show notes, so it's not going to be hard to find. Now, speaking of cool and free golf stuff, there's not much time left for you to win a swing coach club and a video review session with legendary golf instructor Dean Reinmuth. Go to golfsmarter.com and click on the Swing Coach Club image to enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. And please note that your deadline to register is going to be 6 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m. Eastern Time on Tuesday, December 12th, 2017. And soon after that, we're going to get Dean on the phone, and he's going to select two winners. But if you can't wait any longer to get a swing coach in your hands, go to www.swingcoach.com. That's www.swingcoach.com, and you'll save 20% on your order with that checkout code, GolfSmarter. Please connect with us at GolfSmarter on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and go ahead and call in now with your question for Tony Manzoni to answer here on the show, and you'll receive a free copy of The Lost Fundamental on DVD. That number again is 415-761-1498. Have a great week.